Welcome to Ukraine Calling, your weekly review of what's been happening in Ukraine with a focus on a main issue. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. It was an important week for Ukraine, both in terms of the high-level international meetings in Kyiv and developments in and around Verkhovna Rada, Ukraine's parliament. Later in the show, we'll bring you two feature interviews with political scientist Oleksiy Harany and director of the NATO Liaison Office in Ukraine, Alexander Vinnikov. Here are the headlines.
NATO will continue to support Ukraine on the path towards a close relationship with NATO.
President of Ukraine Petro Poroshenko and United States Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
The UN is following and we will be ready to support.
Ми вважаємо за необхідне, і сьогодні на цьому чітко наголошували, щоб ми почали дискусію про запровадження membership action plan.
Yesterday, the EU finalized the ratification of the EU-Ukraine Association Agreement. It will enter into force on the 1st of September.
Ставлю на голосування питання про надання згоди на притягнення до кримінальної відповідальності народного депутата України Добкіна Михайла Марковича.
On July the 9th, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson visited Ukraine and reaffirmed U.S. support for the country. Significantly, he arrived just after the first meeting between President Donald Trump and Russian leader Vladimir Putin in Hamburg 2 days earlier. Tillerson met with Ukrainian President Poroshenko, and at a joint press conference he said,
I think it is important to be very clear on what our goals are, the United States' goals are, with respect to the situation here. And first and foremost, it is to restore Ukraine's territorial sovereignty and integrity.
He also expressed satisfaction with the reform process in Ukraine and encouraged it to continue and be more consistent. On the eve of his visit to Ukraine, Tillerson appointed Kurt Volker, former U.S. ambassador to NATO and National Security Council director, to be special representative for finding a peaceful settlement to the Ukraine-Russia conflict. This week, Volker also made a short preliminary visit to meet with top Ukrainian officials. Also on Sunday, July the 9th, the United Nations Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, made a brief visit to Ukraine. According to his host, President Poroshenko, they shared views on the opportunities of increasing UN's participation in resolving the situation in the Donbas, particularly in the humanitarian sector. The president expressed gratitude to the United Nations Secretary General for his support and the UN's support. Mr. Guterres commented that
the UN is following and we will be ready to support all efforts, both of the Normandy 4, of the TCG, of the OSCE, and to do everything possible for the solution of this crisis that has been lasting already for such a long period.
On Monday, July the 10th, a delegation of the North Atlantic Council arrived in Ukraine. Within its framework, a meeting of the Ukraine NATO Commission was chaired by the NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, with the participation of Ukrainian President Poroshenko. For the first time, the NATO chief also addressed the Verkhovna Rada. He met with senior Ukrainian officials and attended the opening of an exhibit devoted to 20 years of NATO-Ukraine cooperation. Stoltenberg affirmed during his visit that
NATO will continue to support Ukraine on the path towards a close relationship with NATO, to implementing reforms and to meeting NATO standards. And then the message is that whether Ukraine is going to become a member of NATO or not is for the Allies and Ukraine to decide. No one else has the right to try to veto such a process.
For his part, President Poroshenko reiterated that his country aspired to become a member of the Defensive Alliance as soon as the necessary conditions were in place. On July 12-13, an EU-Ukraine summit was held in Kyiv. The European Union was represented by European Council President Donald Tusk and EU Commission head Jean-Claude Juncker. EU President Tusk said,
to celebrate the strong and deepening friendship between the European Union and Ukraine. Yesterday, the EU finalized the ratification of the EU-Ukraine Association Agreement. It will enter into force on the 1st of September. The fully ratified agreement will allow us to further strengthen our cooperation and to deepen the political association and economic integration of Ukraine with the EU. The EU has again made clear that we stand steadfastly behind Ukraine against Russia's aggression and attempts to subvert your independence.
Ukraine's President Poroshenko noted that the association agreement was one of the key requirements and expectations of the Euromaidan. Although no final joint communique was issued, reportedly because of Dutch objections over the wording that the EU acknowledges Ukraine's European aspirations, speaking on behalf of the EU, President Tusk emphasized that the key sentence of the association agreement is, "The European Union acknowledges the European aspirations of Ukraine and welcomes its European choice." There was a considerable shock and dismay this week when a leading low-cost air company, Ryanair, announced that it was abandoning plans to begin low-cost flights from Ukraine to various European cities because of the failure to agree terms with the management of Kyiv's Boryspil Airport. By the end of the week, it was unclear if this decision would remain final or whether the Boryspil Airport authorities would be encouraged by the government to review their position. No good news from the front in eastern Ukraine. Shelling and attacks have continued from the Russian-backed forces, resulting in further military and civilian casualties and destruction. On the domestic scene, attention was focused on the attempts by the Prosecutor General's office to persuade Parliament to lift immunity and allow the arrest of several deputies suspected of corruption and the fate of several important pieces of legislation. Both produced heated debates and even scuffles in Verkhovna Rada, and more apparent deal-making between the various parliamentary factions. The results are mixed. On July 13th, Parliament approved, in its second reading, a law establishing a new type of constitutional court, which is essential for the further implementation of legal and constitutional reforms. Some of its proponents were disappointed that the critical principle of having judges selected on the basis of open, fair, and a competitive selection process was removed. On the same day, Parliament adopted, in its first reading, a bill on pension reform and managed to approve adjustments to the state budget. Between the 11th and 13th of July, the Verkhovna Rada also stripped four lawmakers of their immunity from prosecution.
Ставлю на голосування питання про надання згоди на притягнення до кримінальної відповідальності народного депутата України Добкіна Михайла Марковича. 288 за. Рішення прийнято.
This marks the first time that such a measure has been taken against members of the governing coalition. But Parliament allowed law enforcement agencies to arrest only one of the legislators. And now for our feature interviews. There was a flurry of high-level international visitors to Ukraine this week. The U.S. State Secretary Rex Tillerson, the new Special Envoy to Ukraine Kurt Walker, the Secretary General of the United Nations, the Secretary General of NATO, the President of the European Union, Council of Europe, they're all coming to Ukraine this week. To speak to us about this, what's happening, what this all means, we have a very special guest. Oleksiy Harang is a professor of political science at the National University of the Kyiv Mohyla Academy, and he's also the research director at the Democratic Initiatives Foundation, regular commentator, Ukrainian and international media, one of the top political scientists, international relations in Ukraine. So thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Professor Harang, why did Ukraine become flavor of the week? After months of not really being in the news, suddenly it seems like every important person is coming to visit Ukraine to meet with Ukraine's leaders. What's important about this week? Why are they all here?
Well, I think it actually reflects not only the role of Ukraine in this part of the region in Europe, but it also reflects the long way which Ukraine has passed after the Revolution of Dignity and as a result of different agreements which were signed between Ukraine and international partners. And it's also connected to G20 summit.
I was going to ask about that. That happened last week in Hamburg, and suddenly
the process, conflict in eastern Ukraine, the Minsk process. Actually, we celebrated 10 years of, not 10 years, actually the NATO 20 thing, 20. Years, yeah, 20, right, years 20 years of the signing between Ukraine and NATO of the Charter on Distinctive Partnership. So, and for that, there was a special session of representatives of Parliamentary Assembly of NATO countries, which happened in Kyiv in Verkhovna Rada. And also, it was another event, the Secretary General with the Council of NATO, which means represent ambassadors to NATO from every NATO member country. They held here meetings with high Ukrainian officials. So it was formally connected to signing an anniversary of the charter, but definitely there was a lot of issues which are burning and vital now. First of all, again, connected to the Russian aggression, to what Ukraine expects from NATO also, what Ukraine will do for Ukraine. And again, it was a good opportunity to sum up what have been done in relations between Ukraine and the West and what has been done within Ukraine. I would start maybe from discussing two really, really important issues and achievements. First, visa-free regime for Ukrainians. This is extremely important. That was, Ukrainians were striving for that. We did a lot of things to achieve this this visa-free regime, and the EU confirmed that Ukraine has fulfilled all the criteria in order to receive it. And finally, we get it after.
I know, that's such an amazing feeling.
It's amazing feeling.
I mean,
feeling.
You've traveled a lot, so this will... Have you traveled since the visa-free regime?
Well, actually not yet. And I have Schengen visa, but a lot of my colleagues, friends, now they are planning their travels to Europe, family actually, trips, you know, because now they don't need any visa. So this is really, really important. And there was the first statistic during the first months of the introduction of visa-free regime, 100,000 of Ukrainians used it. So they traveled with new biometric passports without Schengen visas. And there were cases when some Ukrainians were not allowed. Do you know the number? 50. And I will tell you from my emotional experience, when I first received long-term Schengen visa, and it was long ago in 1995, and I was based in Germany on fellowship, and this was extreme wonderful feeling when you can sit to
describe
the train
it.
And go to Brussels and go to Paris and go to Amsterdam. Incredible. So first, secondly, finally, association agreement between the EU and Ukraine, which Ukrainian fought for, and that was the first reason why Ukrainians organized Maidan, came into force, formally and officially, because de facto it was in force. But there were some problems, you know, connected with ratification, with the results of the consultative referendum in Netherlands. It wasn't clear how formally, from legal point of view, it could be solved. Now it's solved. So we have this association agreement, and this is also incredible step forward.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I would like to get back to the high-level visitors who've been passing through Ukraine this week. You've been following these visits, the statements, the meetings with the Ukrainian officials. What are the key messages, the key statements that you heard from Tillerson, from Stoltenberg, from any of these leaders? Anything stands out for you that, you know, this is the message
they've been...
Yeah,
I will concentrate on two things. First is the Minsk process, and second is our relations with NATO. So I think what was really important that President Poroshenko met with Trump before G20, so he could deliver Ukrainian arguments before Trump's meeting with Putin. And after this meeting, after G20, Tillerson came to Ukraine. So again, in order to explain to Ukraine the dynamics, and this is really important, that the fate of Ukraine is not decided by somebody, but not by Ukraine.
So is this a shift in U.S.-Ukraine relations? Because people were very afraid when Trump was running for president and when he was elected, the messages about Ukraine.
I was also afraid, frankly speaking. So what we see right now, there's still a lot of uncertainty. Okay, because we know that President Trump is not, in some cases, not very well predicted what he can do. But what is clear is definitely that many people in Trump administration now, they understand really what's going on in Ukraine. They define Russia as aggressor. They understand the reasons for the conflict. And actually, Tillerson, he repeated that, first of all, Russia is to withdraw from Ukraine, full stop. Otherwise, sanctions would not be removed. What is also important is that the United States appointed a special envoy on Ukraine negotiations, Kurt Volker. I pronounce him in German way, it would be actually perfect. Volker, but Americans pronounce it as Walker. So this is also important because that's what Ukrainian side actually demanded, because we have Normandy process, right? But U.S. formally is not part of this process. They participate, but they are not formally part of the process. And we remember that the United States and the U.K. and Russia signed Budapest Memorandum about the gas security assurance to Ukraine. So Ukrainians would like somehow to formalize the U.S. presence in negotiations. So I believe that's really important that now we have this special envoy, and he would connect more closely U.S. to Normandy process. Again, that's what Ukrainian side wanted. And finally, I would talk about NATO, because there was something new. You know that Ukraine strived to get a membership action plan, MAP. Ukraine was very close to get it in 2006.
Which was under the presidency of Viktor Yushchenko.
Yes, but unfortunately, Prime Minister Yanukovych suddenly changed the course and said that we don't want it. In 2008, Ukraine again applied for that, but the situation became much more complicated. So we didn't receive it, but there is a program on actually what Ukraine is to do in order to move closer to criteria of NATO. So what is important now, what was raised by President Poroshenko, is that he said during the closed meeting, he repeated it during the press conference, that Ukraine would like to apply again for membership action plan in 2020. And now to start the dialogue about that. So to start this process. And it's not clear, actually, what would be the answer from the West. Because some would agree, some would not. There are concerns about Russia and so on and so forth. What is really important is that the public attitudes in Ukraine have changed. So Ukrainians now support NATO. So we have.
Could you cite statistics for us? Because this is something you're monitoring public opinion and democratic initiatives.
If we have a referendum of NATO, 70% of those who would come to vote would say yes.
And how does this compare with, I don't know, 5 years ago or 10 years ago?
No, we can 15% were in favor of NATO.
So this has gone from 15 to 70.
Skyrocket. Still, we have the regional differences on that. There are many people and maybe plurality in East and South which would stay for non-bloc status, which didn't prevent Ukraine from Russia's aggression. But any idea of military union with Russia totally collapsed. The same is true about so-called Eurasian Union. So Ukrainians doesn't believe in the Eastern vector right now. So there is a support for NATO now, which we didn't have in five or 10 years ago. And this gives some justification for Ukraine to apply for MAP. Again, MAP doesn't mean NATO membership immediately, but this is one step to move closer and to increase security capabilities for Ukraine to withstand Russian aggression. And you know, actually, again, as I have said, this would not be easy for NATO countries to decide on that, because on the one hand we have Russian aggression, we have clear violation of territorial integrity of Ukraine, and everybody in NATO agrees about that. But then comes this so-called Russian factor. Should we irritate Russia or not? Should we support Ukraine? So it won't be easy, frankly speaking. It won't be easy to have this dialogue, to push for a membership action plan, but it's necessary to talk about that. So, and Poroshenko now, he has support from Ukrainian society.
Mm. What are some expected outcomes from these visits that these visitors who passed through Ukraine this week? Sometimes high-level visitors come, they speak, they make statements, and they leave. Do you see anything concrete coming out of these?
So, first of all, again, as I have said, EU, we finished a very, very important process which Russia tried to undermine, and we moved to the next phase of our cooperation.
So this will be really sort of more nuts and bolts, sort of talking about how to implement the agreement.
Exactly. It's in very, very concrete spheres like energy, also rule of law, and all others. So this is very important. As to Minsk process, I have said now there is much better understanding of Ukrainian position. And I would say support of key Ukrainian, yes, positions. The sanctions were continued against Russia. So it gives more, I would say, weight and also more significance to what Ukraine and Western partners can do together in Minsk process.
So more of an understanding of the Ukrainian position at high levels in Washington, in Brussels.
Yeah, and so there is a possibility to put more pressure on Russia within this process. Okay, we cannot predict, because we understand that whether Russian aggression continues depends first of all
on Russia.
But Russia would have to calculate cost and benefits of it. And my feeling is that Western position now is quite strong, because sanctions are continued, and moreover we can hear about possibility of increasing of sanctions connected with Russian interference into American elections. We don't know about that, how it would happen. But the situation now is much, so Ukraine's position now is much stronger in this process. And finally, as I have said, on NATO, because on NATO we have this cooperation, we have standardization of
procedures and all
procedures,
that sort of thing.
Standards,
training.
Exactly. But again, politically, Poroshenko moved to another step. So, and this would involve long, I think, negotiations.
One more question that just came to my mind. Do you see a closening of U.S. and EU position on Ukraine? Because in the past, that's been a concern that the EU, particularly France and Germany, are involved in the Minsk process, and Normandy, U.S. is not. Now there's this special envoy. They're all sort of speaking the same language. Do you see that they're coming?
Yes, I see, definitely. And it's an interesting situation, because we understand that first we saw this Normandy process with some suspicion, right? Because there was not good understanding of what was going in the east of Ukraine. And at that point, American position, sanctions. So the U.S. were the motor for sanctions. And actually, they did a lot to have EU sanctions against Russia. With Trump election, there was a period of uncertainty. And at that time, two women played important role. I mean, Frau Merkel and Theresa May, who said, no, it's important to support Ukraine, it's important to continue sanctions. And now we see that the U.S. now again starting to increase, I would say, increase pressure on Russia. So we see this, there's no a gap now between the U.S. and EU position. Again, a lot is quite complicated because there are domestic processes in every EU country. It's not easy to have this united voice. But Macron is elected. Macron made strong statements in support of Ukraine. Poroshenko met with Macron. There are good chances that Frau Merkel will be re-elected, hopefully. The position of Social Democrats also is not bad for Ukraine. Populist, right populist in the Netherlands, they lost. Okay, we see some positive changes in the administration, position of Trump administration. So I would say now the situation looks much better than it was, say, at the end of the last year.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for that analysis, that insight, and that optimistic ending. We've had Professor...
I'm cautious optimist.
Cautious optimist.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Talking about negative trends as well, mm-hmm. But in general, I remain optimist.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with Professor Oleksiy Harain from the National University of the Kyiv-Mohyla Academy and the Democratic Initiatives Foundation. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
The NATO Secretary General, Mr. Jens Stoltenberg, was one of the high-level visitors who came to Kyiv this week. Alexander Vinnikov is the director of the NATO Liaison Office here in Ukraine. Mr. Vinnikov, you've had a very busy week. Thank you very much for finding the time to speak to Hromadske Radio's Ukraine Calling. Ukraine and NATO have a long, some would say complicated relationship, starting back in 1994 with the signing of the Partnership for Peace program. This week, the Secretary General visited. Could you please explain to our listeners what the purpose of the visit was and the timing of it?
Well, thank you, first of all, for the invitation. Indeed, we've been very busy with preparations for this visit that you mentioned. This was not just the Secretary General visiting, but he was leading a large delegation, including 29 permanent representatives of NATO member states in Brussels, so the ambassadors to NATO. Together, they formed the North Atlantic Council. This is the principal decision-making body in NATO. And this was, in fact, the first NAC visit to Ukraine since 2008. So it is a rare opportunity. And I think the symbolism was very clear. NATO stands with Ukraine. And the timing was specifically chosen to mark the 20th anniversary of the signing of the charter between NATO and Ukraine, a charter on a distinctive partnership, which was signed on the 9th of July, 1997.
So exactly 20 years later.
Exactly 20 years later, the North Atlantic Council visited Ukraine to mark this occasion and to underline the strong support and the unwavering support of NATO for Ukraine.
So what were the main accomplishments? Statements of support are very important, but was there anything concrete that was discussed or accomplished during this very important high-level visit?
Well, the visit contained both an official part, meetings with high-level representatives of Ukraine, and a public outreach component. The centerpiece of the visit, I would say, was a formal session of the NATO-Ukraine Commission, chaired by the Secretary General and hosted by the President of Ukraine. Now, this was a very comprehensive meeting where allies and Ukraine discussed the key issues on the agenda. This included, of course, the situation in eastern Ukraine, where the conflict was discussed. Ukraine briefed on the latest situation, and allies expressed their strong support for Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity. They also called on Russia to withdraw its forces from the east of Ukraine and to stop its support for the militants.
Was there any reaction from Russia to that statement?
Well, I haven't seen any reactions from the Russian side. The Secretary General also had bilateral meetings with the Prime Minister of Ukraine and the Speaker of the Verkhovna Rada. And the full North Atlantic Council met with parliamentarians, with the leadership and the heads of the factions in parliament and key committees. So this was also an important opportunity to hear from the representatives of the people what their views were. Also, the Secretary General made a historic first address to the Rada, in plenary.
Quoting Taras Shevchenko, if
quoting
I'm not mistaken.
Taras Shevchenko, indeed. And also really, I think, calling on the parliamentarians to lead in the struggle for reform. The public outreach elements included the opening of an exhibition at the Mistetsky Arsenal, which I would invite everyone who is in Kiev to come and visit.
Absolutely. It's quite very impressive.
It is an impressive exhibition that really showcases the achievements of 20 years of cooperation between Ukraine and NATO. We also organized three separate panels where ambassadors could reach out to civil society and discuss important issues such as reforms, such as the role of women in peace and security issues, and the situation of Crimean Tatars and Crimea in general, the situation in Crimea.
There were also a number of concrete promises, but steps, cooperation. Cybersecurity is something that has been very much in the international news. The recent cyber attack that crippled many countries, not just Ukraine. Was there discussion on that or some of the other concrete sort of projects or support that NATO has been offering Ukraine or extending?
Yes. Practical cooperation is a very important part of NATO's support for Ukraine. It should not be just political, as you said. There should be concrete results. And I think over the past 3 years, NATO has really stepped up its practical support for Ukraine. We do this through a number of trust funds and programs, 10 trust funds, in fact, totaling about 40 million euros.
So trust fund, can you explain what that is?
Yes, a trust fund is like a pot of money to which both allies and partners are invited to contribute, and which then implements concrete projects in a partner country, so in this case, in Ukraine. The trust funds that we currently have cover a wide array of issues, including medical rehabilitation for wounded soldiers, cyber defense, which you already mentioned.
Could you give us an idea of how big these trust funds are?
Well, the total value is about 40 million.
Mm-hmm. Euros.
I would say that the largest one is probably the demilitarization a trust fund, which deals with outdated and unserviceable ammunition and small arms, which pose a security risk. Since the beginning of the aggression, many other trust funds have been created, including cyber, medical, but also communications, military career transition. When it comes to cyber, the topicality of this issue was underlined by many participants. And I think we all face this threat. We all face cyber incidents, be it Ukraine or NATO. We are all subject to these hybrid methods that Russia is using, not only against Ukraine, but also against some of our countries.
Mm-hmm. It spreads globally. NATO has been cooperating with Ukraine in all the spheres you've outlined, but the big question really is about membership. And during this visit of the Secretary General and the delegation, Ukraine's President Poroshenko said that Ukraine is now ready to start discussions about the membership action plan, aiming for 2020. What is the NATO position on that statement?
Indeed, the President of Ukraine raised the issue of the membership action plan, both during the meeting of the NATO-Ukraine Commission and also during the joint press conference, which followed. What I can say is that the alliance took note of the president's proposals to discuss this. The current focus of Ukraine is on reform and on the modernization of its security and defense sector institutions. I would add one more point, which is a strong message that the Secretary General delivered about NATO's open door policy. You may be aware that Montenegro recently joined the alliance as its 29th member, and this reconfirms that the open door policy very much remains a cornerstone of NATO. It is the sovereign right of any European country to seek or not to seek membership of an international organization or of a security alliance. And therefore, it is Ukraine's right to do so. And the decision on membership is up to the applicant state and the 29 NATO allies. And no other party should have a say or seek to influence that political process.
Thank you. When is the next meeting between NATO and Ukraine scheduled?
Well, we have meetings on a very regular basis at various levels. So we have ambassadorial meetings, we have working level meetings, we have ministerials, and of course, from time to time, summit level meetings. Right now, work is ongoing on the working level, and I think there will be probably the opportunity for ministerial meetings further in the year.
Thank you. So it's a work in progress.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for finding the time to speak to us. We've been speaking with Mr. Alexander Vinnikov, the head of the NATO delegation in Ukraine. In the cultural sphere, the big event of the week is the opening of the Odessa Film Festival on July the 14th. It will run until the 22nd of July. During these 9 days, there will be exclusive premieres of foreign and Ukrainian films, masterclasses of the world's leading filmmakers, and a unique open-air film performance on the Potemkin Stairs, special shows, and plenty of parties. The film selection is focused on so-called art mainstream, films that possess a refined artistic quality yet are accessible to the broadest possible audience. For the Odessa International Film Festival, viewers are the main focus. Since 2012, the festival's Grand Prix is awarded by the audience. Other non-competition sections include retrospectives, tributes, collections of the newest films from different countries, and festival hits. This week's song is by a band called Krамола. They combine power metal, Ukrainian folk, and progressive metal. This song, Molfar, is from their latest album. Enjoy! We'll be right back. Next week, we'll be looking at the status of Ukraine's economy, as well as the latest headlines and analysis. Tune in for a new episode, and we'd love to hear from you. Write to us at ukrainecalling@hromadskeradio.org. I'm Marta Dychok for Hromadske Radio in Kyiv. Thanks for listening.